Live from Burbank, California, where the National Guard was called in to control the farmers' market, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, unhand his jicama, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim.
Hello, Mark.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, you lurking conservatives, need machines and pain spongies, and independent speculative investigators. I'll tell you, our guest yesterday got mixed reviews in the big world of the blog. Look, I didn't have him on because it was fresh information. The reason I had Dr. David Ray Griffin on the show is I'm being pestered by people. I'm being pestered by people who have latched onto this thing. And I was hoping to make him look a little smaller than he came off. I didn't have time to try to make a connection with why the hell is a theology professor so preoccupied with the 9/11 conspiracy. Or the 9/11 independent speculative investigation, or the loose change video. Most of this stuff was discredited a while ago. I believe that almost none of it. Like I've always said, I stand by the fact that I think that they were complicit in their negligence, but I don't believe the orchestration. And then, you know, I started to think, I've always thought, as a former, you know, kind of obsessive independent speculative investigator, what it is characterologically, what it is in someone's personality that makes them prone to that kind of stuff. And it is really a need for, there's a self-centeredness to it. There's a need to have secret wisdom. There's a need to think you know a truth that nobody else knows, even though it's based on hearsay or flimsy evidence. There's a need to feel superior to others. There's even the possibility that it's hiding a latent homosexuality or perhaps a need to connect.
Huh?
What? Where'd I lose you?
What? What was that? That last remark. The
latent homosexuality?
Yeah, hiding latent homosexuality.
I once asked my ex-father-in-law, who was a psychiatrist, about what the paranoid personality is based on. And he said it is literally a fear of being screwed in the arse.
Then he screamed, "What the hell are you looking at? Get out of here."
Whatever the point being is that ultimately paranoia or that sense of victimization or constantly that you are the one. You are the one that has the secret wisdom. You are the one whose phones are being tapped. You are the one that knows what other people don't know. You are the one that is either put to the test to tell the world about it or to keep this secret. It all seems a little hinky to me. Jim, that's what all I'm saying is that there's a type of person that's attracted to this, and the fact that the guy's a theologian, a believer. See, I believe that much of the dogma that begins to grow around what some people call conspiracy theories, and I think I'm going to go ahead and use that term, although the right wing has hijacked it,
yeah,
in this case, is a similar type of commitment that revolves around religious dogma. That, you know, in religious dogma, you have a lot of unprovable stories that people take to believe, that people choose to believe as truth, and revealing some secret, wisdom. I think that the kind of commitment that revolved around the JFK assassination and the type of commitment that's starting to revolve around this theory around 9/11 is similar. It gives people a sense of community. They bond in fear and the idea of secret wisdom. And the truth of the matter is, really, it's never going to be proven. And most of it has already been proven to be false. Again, I am completely willing to take this administration, the neocon death cult, and their minions to task for what we can see as real, for their transgressions around the Constitution, around international law, around the Geneva Conventions, around civil liberties, how they've completely abused and re-legislated this country to almost kill lower class people. There's enough of a menu to indict these guys, corruption in the House. There's enough of a menu to indict these guys with facts than to get preoccupied with a new conspiracy dogma. Now, I'm going to get some flack for that. And again, even, you know, 7 World Trade Center looks a little scary. But as you said, there's structural issues. And this thing has been broken down by several different people. And these people are not, they're going to choose to disregard science. So in a sense, not unlike the right wing, they will stare in the face of science and fact and say, "All right, sure, you can prove it, but there's an outside chance." You know, but they wouldn't even consider it an outside chance. They will look in the face of scientific and engineering fact and say, "That's crap. my way. I know.
And you say the origin of all this is denying one's own sexuality.
It's a persecution complex. I'm saying that is just one angle of it. It may not be for everybody, but you'll see that most of these guys they fit a certain profile. Most of them are men. Most of them are white. And if you start looking or poking around in terms of where conspiracies lead, if you start poking around in the Illuminati conspiracy, the United Nations conspiracy, if you start poking around into the Trilateral Commission conspiracy,
Hebrew conspiracy,
Elders of Zion. Yeah, the Elders of Zion conspiracy, you know, which some people integrate into the broader Illuminati conspiracy, will always bring you back to a sort of racist, psycho-libertarian ideology and fringe element. It's sort of where the right and the left meet in Idaho. Do you understand what I'm saying?
So, yeah, I'm kind of getting it.
Yeah. It's just like if you trace it all back, it is very frightened, very white, very exclusionary, very paranoid and marginalized way of thinking, and it's where the left and the right meet when they come full circle on the extremes.
And they're all in the closet.
Some of them, absolutely, without a doubt. I will go to Alex Jones's website. I will be back with Margaret Cho. She'll be on the phone. We haven't talked to her in a while. You looking forward to that, Jim?
Yeah, I talked to her a year ago, I think, didn't I?
Yeah, on Morning Sedition. That was awkward. Was it? All right, we'll be back.
In the show?
Yeah, the entire year and a half of the show is awkward.
And now he raises your awareness because he's a celebrity. Mark Maron.
That's right. I abused my celebrity status to go ahead and talk politics. All right, folks. Margaret Cho is a comedian. She is a phenomenon. She is spectacular and fabulous in all those words you apply to somebody like Margaret Cho. She has toured the country and the world with her numerous one-person shows. She is a star of several movies based on her shows. Notorious Cho, I'm the One That I Want, and Assassin, all available at margaretcho.com. She wrote the film Bam Bam and Celeste, and now she's doing some other thing, the Sensuous Woman Review, and she's on the phone with us right now. How are you, Margaret Cho?
I'm doing great.
I'm so glad you're here. Say hello to your old friend, Jim Earle.
Hi, Jim.
Margaret, is that you?
It's me.
Oh, man.
I'm getting all teary.
I know. I miss you.
Where are you?
I'm at home.
In Silver Lake?
Yes.
You don't own the pink house, do you?
No.
Okay. Because I used to, when I first learned that you lived in Silver Lake, I would drive by the reservoir and I'd be like, I wonder which one Margaret lives in. And there used to be that pink house there. You remember that bright pink house?
Yeah, I guess so. Yes. Very pink.
That wouldn't be you.
No.
I don't know who the house that is. So what the hell's going on? It's been a while since I saw you. Now there's this Sensuous Woman Review. What is that about?
Sensuous Woman. It's the show that I'm doing. It's at El Cid.
Uh-huh.
And it's tomorrow. It's the third Wednesday of every month.
At El Cid tomorrow night. Oh, that's good. We might actually be able to get some people out there. That's kind of a weird old place, El Cid.
I know. You know, it was built by D.W. Griffith.
No.
In 1914.
Really?
I think for intolerance.
It was built with the money he made from his racist film?
Yes. It was built so that, I think, for a set.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing. It's amazing. This show is, amazing. And what I wanted to do is do this show that was, because I'm a dancer. I think I told you that.
You are a dancer?
I'm a belly dancer.
I had no idea that you were a belly dancer. When did this happen?
I started belly dancing a few years ago.
Are you really good at it?
I'm really good at it.
Can you make the things jingle?
Yes, all the things.
Oh, man.
And but then I wanted to do a show that showcased some of the talent that I had come across in my dancing travels. And
Who?
Put together all these different dancers.
Like from where? What do you mean from your travels?
Oh, well, I've been all over the world dancing as well as doing comedy.
Wait a minute. So Margaret Cho comes into town. Mm-hmm. She's in, Sweden, doing a big show in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And it's Margaret Cho belly dances. Are you saying that? That you actually...
Yeah.
What?
No. Yeah.
Now, is this for mainstream audiences or just the belly dancing crowd?
Well, for the belly dancing crowd, but actually this show isn't really a belly dance show because it's much more fun now that it's actually a burlesque show.
Okay, so burlesque means there's some pasties. And twirling boobies.
Twirling boobies, and it's amazing. I mean, it's an incredible, great, wonderful, fun evening.
Margaret, I went to a burlesque show, the other one, the one that you see around here in L.A. sometimes?
The Lucha Vavoom.
Yeah, I think that was it. And the woman who was in Faster Pussycat?
Yes. Sarah Zatanna.
Right. She came out to do some breast work.
Yes.
And because she can twirl the pasties in opposite directions.
I can do that as well.
Oh. And
with your breasts?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the problem was is that she's a little older now, and she was having some trouble, and she had to, do it manually, and then one of the pasties came off, and it was one of the more painful moments I've experienced as an audience member.
Oh, no.
But I'm not judging what you do in any way. I just wanted to share that with you.
She's a living legend, though.
Yeah, no, she was great, and I felt bad for her. I wish that some sort of pasty roadie could have come out or done something or helped her out. No, I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed these things, and I'm gonna actually try to come to your show tomorrow night. Belly dancing, that's very exciting. They used to teach a belly dancing course at the gym that I used to work out in, and you could see into the studio right from the Stairmaster thing, from the treadmills. I had a very difficult time working out.
Well, you get distracted.
I'll say. So
it's very fun, though.
No, it looks great, and it looks healthy, and it looks it's very enchanting, and it seems timeless to me. Now, what about, is there any comedy on the show?
There's comedy.
Like who?
There's
who's
going to
be on tomorrow?
There's a new girl. She's like my protege. She's so cute. Holly Bruckner.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another woman named Sean Polofsky, who I don't know, but I hear she's really good.
Okay.
And there's Liam Sullivan, who's a great comic. He's a genius, and he makes short films, but he's performing as Kelly, his rock star Kelly, and the rapper, gay rapper extraordinary MC Lisp.
MC Lisp?
MC Lisp is on.
Hey, what do you know about this guy, Anthony and the Johnsons? Do you ever listen to him? I just got, I watched some film, a Leonard Cohen tribute, and he was on it, and I'd never seen him before, and he's sort of I don't know what he is exactly, if he's a transvestite or transsexual or what, but what a haunting, weird voice. You should check him out.
Yes, it's kind of like a strange falsetto.
Yeah, it's like Roy Orbison and Boy George together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just wanted to know if you knew him or something.
No, I don't know him, but maybe he'll be on our show.
Yeah.
We have music, too. We have the Music Lovers, who's a great band from San Francisco who I just adore.
Okay.
Lots of stuff. I mean,
it's sounds
an
exciting
show.
It sounds great. And this tomorrow night at El Cid, that's Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get in or what?
Yes, you can.
There's going to be room?
There'll be room.
Only if you dance.
For you.
I'm going to sit right up front if Margaret Cho is going to belly dance.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm not belly dancing tomorrow. I'm stripping tomorrow.
I'll be on stage.
I'll be
on stage with a wad of ones, wad of singles.
You're going to be stripping antique furniture?
People. I do a puppet act. It's not just stripping. I strip and I actually manipulate puppets.
Whoa. Now, okay, so these puppets, are they connected to anything or are they on your hands?
They're
on
my hands.
Oh, okay, they're not breast puppets.
No.
Okay.
They're two cobras I got when I was in India. So they're my friends, and they dance with me.
They're not, okay, they're puppet cobras. You were in India?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, how long were you in India for?
I was only there for a few weeks.
Was it great? Did you get sick? Did you get stomach?
I got so sick.
Oh.
I was so sick the whole time that I don't even know what happened.
Really?
And it was like a hallucinatory experience. Like the whole time, I was so sick it felt like I was on acid.
I'm completely fascinated with India for culinary reasons, and I'm frightened to go there specifically because no one has ever said anything but, like, it's great after you get rid of the diarrhea.
Yeah, you get so sick, and I never really got rid of it, and I was sick probably for about a month after I came home.
That sounds like a great trip.
Yeah.
Oh.
It really stays with you. All of those bacteria really stay with
That's
you.
That's awful.
But it's beautiful.
Well, where what other exotic countries did you go to?
Let's see.
Did you go to Thailand?
I've been to Thailand, yes.
Is that great?
I think it's a very difficult country to travel in. I think it's a great country. It's beautiful. I've been to Nepal, which I think is very difficult.
That's difficult, too?
I think it's worse than India in a lot of ways.
How about Morocco?
Not yet, but I will.
Okay. Well, tell me about that when you get there.
I will.
So what do I want to talk about? Let's talk about this thing you did at UCLA, the tribute to Spalding Gray.
Oh, yes. That was very interesting. That was last week. And, I always was a big fan of his work, and he was the first celebrity I think I ever met.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing the Solo Mio show in San Francisco, and
right.
he came to the Holy City Zoo to see me, and it was so surreal because I didn't know that you could actually like meet famous people at that point. I hadn't met any. I didn't see any. And
especially at the Holy City Zoo at that point.
Yeah.
What year was that, like in the late 80s?
That was like in 1989, I think.
Okay, so you met him, and what do you have to say?
He was very kind. He was very, very complimentary and very nice, and I was so thrilled. And then, you know, I'd always really liked him a lot, and I just thought he was so interesting and so funny. And
mm-hmm.
So his death was quite difficult to really understand. And, you know, it's something a little bit like Elliot Smith, you know, somebody that you would...
Yeah.
You think, oh, well, they do talk a lot about sadness and
yeah.
grief, but you never think that it's actually going to... Yeah, take him away.
There's part of you that acknowledges the tragedy, but there's another part of you that goes, yeah, well, I can understand on some
yes.
level.
Oh, I definitely can understand
sure.
and relate to it.
So what was the tribute? You guys read stuff that he had written that had not been published? Is that what the angle was?
I think it was about reading things that were from his journals and reading things that, the stories that he actually had told. I wasn't sure. There were a lot of things I hadn't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And then some that I had. So there were interesting things, different things, and it was a great honor. And, you know, it was all put together by his family, and, you know, a lot of the people were friends of his, and so it was a beautiful thing to be a part of, and it was me and John C. Reilly that night, I think, and Roger Guinevere Smith, who's really genius, and just a lot of cool people. I think Miranda July did it the next day.
And Tony Shalhoub, I think, was involved, and Terry Garr.
Yeah, it's like
that's
great.
That's great. Are you still married?
Yes, I am.
How's that going? Okay.
Really well.
Okay, good. Well, good for you.
Yes.
All right. So tomorrow night at the El Cid, and are you touring with the comedy at all?
Yes, I am.
Where are you going?
I'm going to be doing like lots of different things. I'm also going to tour with The Sensuous Woman.
Oh,
we're
great!
We're bringing it to Fire Island on July 5th, and we're going to be in New York once a month, and we'll be in San Francisco once a month after.
Oh, that's
that,
great! So. Fire Island—that's high season too, huh?
High season.
That's going to be great. Okay, well, thanks for joining us, Margaret. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Bye, Tim.
Goodbye,
bye.
Margaret.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, we will come back here in just a second and do. How come I'm looking at a stack of papers and I never know exactly where I'm going? Okay, yeah, Paul Waldman from Media Matters will be here, so stay with us. He's not going to be here, he'll be on the phone.
He loves to gaze at his Klimt. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. On the phone with us right now, Congresswoman Maxine Waters of the 35th Congressional District of California. That's here in L.A. Congresswoman Waters serves on the Committee on the Judiciary and its subcommittees on courts, the Internet, intellectual property, crime, terrorism. She covers it all. She's very outspoken. She's a great congressperson. Thanks for being with us again.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet.
I'm glad you're calling me, having seen that so-called debate that we had on last
yeah.
week.
I wanted to ask you about that because I was sort of surprised by it. It seemed like it was a big trick by Majority Leader John Boehner, or Boehner, however he wants to pronounce
yeah,
his name.
That's his name, Boehner, yeah.
Yeah, that he wanted to sort of corner the Democrats, but it looks like it didn't really work.
It didn't quite work the way they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second trick. That they have trapped us into
uh-huh.
on this Iraq war. What they do is they put something up that's basically meaningless by way of a resolution, and they try to throw in phrases like support for the soldiers and to make you sound as if you don't support it, you don't support the soldiers, you're not patriotic, but at the same time, they are trying to dare you not to support it so they can use it against you with your reelection campaigns. But, as you know, there are some of us who are very, very strong and adamant about trying to get our troops home.
Well, it's
so we did have a significant number to oppose it.
It just seems to me that, you know, with reports out that the two soldiers that were missing yesterday have been killed by Al-Qaeda affiliates, then there's a report, apparently a message sent from the U.S. Embassy to the White House days before Bush went to Baghdad, that Baghdad's never really been worse. Zarqawi's replacement is already in action. And it just seems to me that, you know, with the, we're heading towards, you know, 3,000 American troops killed, and it just seems that America is not going to buy this accusation of cut and run, this accusation of non-patriotism. I think they've had enough, and it seems that some Republicans have had enough for the same reason and also for fiscal reasons.
Well, I certainly hope so. The American people have been extremely tolerant of this president and his distortions and his misleading information. They know now that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and they also know that there's no money from the oil pumping that's going to rehabilitate and, you know, put Baghdad back together again. They also know that the so-called training of the troops has not taken place where, you know, they can handle their own affairs or what have you. They just know that something's wrong with all of this, and increasingly, the polls are showing it. They're taking advantage of the American public, and they're trying to not only make Americans feel unpatriotic if they don't support them in this war, they're trying to make them believe that if we leave the war, we're spineless, we're cut and run, as they keep saying. But again, it's only a matter of time before Americans are truly going to demand that they get out of this war. And it's going to show up in the midterm elections also.
Yeah, Congresswoman Waters, I was watching Congressman Murtha on the Tube on Sunday, and he believes that you know, this whole idea of staying the course is no excuse for not having a plan. And he seems to think that George Bush and company, or the neocon death cult, as I call them, are actually trying to figure out a way to get those troops out of there because they know that they have to change course. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think they're feeling the heat. And I think that they can't just come forward and be truthful with the American people and admit that there have been mistakes, mishaps, and that it's not going to be a military solution, that that's not going to win.
Uh-huh.
They won't say it. They
right.
won't own up to it.
Right.
But maybe in the back room they're trying to figure out how to do it before it really catches up with them.
Yeah, and that won't be till after the midterms, because they
yeah.
are going to use this cut-and-run thing to attempt some traction.
Right.
I think I'm confident about the midterms. I think you're from California here, and Francine Busby ran into some problems in her race as a result of something she said that was spun out of perspective by the right in terms of immigration.
Yeah, they took that and they wrapped it around her neck and
yeah.
just strangled her with it. But she was doing very well.
She was. It was very impressive given the layout of that district and how Republican it is. But let's talk about immigration, because this is a California-based show, and you're
That's
from
right.
California. Where do you stand on it? How do we deal with the immigration issue?
Well, here's what I feel.
Uh-huh.
I feel that the Sensenbrenner bill that came out was just outrageous.
Yes.
It went too far.
Uh-huh.
And it's unrealistic. You're not going to lock up everybody or deport everybody. And you know, we need to just take that off the table
mm-hmm.
as being a halfway legitimate anything. We need to understand that, yes, it is all right to secure the border and to make the president do what he said he was going to do some time ago, to have new border agents down there and mm-hmm. securing the border and stopping the influx of illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right. But number two, you have to understand and know that the Chamber of Commerce is in the back room here,
right.
Lobbying day in and day out. They want that cheap labor. They want to be able to exploit these workers and to get their products and their services done at very little cost. And I think that they are the ones that are breaking the law.
That's exactly.
They're the ones that are not only exploiting, but even cheating
yeah.
many of these workers. And we need to stop that, and we need to find them. And be tough on them. Second, thirdly, we have to have a path to legalization. The 11 to 13 million or so people that are here, many of whom, you know, own homes, they pay taxes, the children have been born here. I'm not about to support anything that's going to separate families
yeah.
and send, you know, grandmothers and mothers and grandfathers and fathers in one direction while the children would be staying here. We've got to come up with a plan by which we can offer a way by people can be legalized. I think that's absolute. I am not for the president's guest worker program. I don't like it. I think that of the 11 to 13 million people that are here, there are people who are working, you know, in some of these industries that say they need people, then they ought to use the people who are already here to do that, and not less, you know, just cave in to the Chamber of Commerce and others who want to do further exploitation. I think if we kind of look at it that way, that we can get some fairness, justice, and equality here. I just don't think that the Sensenbrenner bill should be considered by anybody.
Yeah, well, he's an awful little man. our guest is Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And it strikes me, what you said strikes a chord with me in that I read recently that the amount that these companies or these corporations are penalized when they break the law in terms of hiring illegals is almost nothing. And it's gone down to nothing. And the fines are ridiculous. It seems to me that they need to be taken to task.
Well, if they spend this little money, it's just the cost of doing business.
Exactly.
I mean, the fines are nothing. They have never enforced anything against these big corporations. And when you look down in New Orleans at what they're doing, you know, some of these no-bid contractors, the Halliburton, the Fluor Corporation, the Bechtels, they subcontract, as if they don't know what's going on. Those subcontractors are wooing people from Guatemala. They're sleeping outdoors. They don't have food to eat. They cheat them. Some of them threaten to turn them in to the immigration authorities after they have done the work. We really got to stop it. We got to go after these corporate rogues.
And it's interesting who you mentioned. These are all presidential cronies.
Big time.
Well, let's move on to another issue that we talk not as much as we should about on my show, and it's come up in the Busby race. Is that how are we going to secure these voting machines? What's going on with that?
Well, we've got a long way to go. I mean, first of all, we got to get Diebold out of the business of selling these machines to us. I mean, people who have, you know, admitted that they're, you know, the Bush's friends and that they have been working with them over a long period of time. We can't trust them.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, what I would like to do is I would like to put a moratorium on all of the various voting machines.
That's interesting.
And until we have standards where we have a paper trail and we can count on the technology, we know and we have verified the technology that's used, I'd like to stop it all right now.
So you're saying go back to the old paper ballots I've never heard that before, and that seems like a practical way to do it until we can work out the glitches.
Until we can get a standard that's consistent
across the country.
That's right, across the entire country.
That's a good idea. So what do you think, now let's talk about the main issues as we move towards November that the Democrats are going to be standing on and that they're clear about in terms of campaigning in the midterms. What do you see them as?
Well, you know, I see our party as, number one, recognizing that we're in deep trouble on health care in America.
Yeah.
And unless we come up with a comprehensive universal health care program, people are literally going to be dying in the streets.
That's true.
I mean, this is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, not only are people not covered on their jobs, what we find is those people who have plans now are beginning to eliminate them or to find ways by which to have employees work for, you know, long periods of time coming into their businesses without health care, without any coverage. We got to have a potable plan so that it moves with the person from job to job. We've got to have everybody with the possibility of being covered. This is big, and we should pay a lot of attention to that. I think we really should fight hard for increasing the minimum wage.
Yeah.
This is outrageous.
Yeah.
That people are working for such little money, and the cost of living and the cost of gasoline, just getting to work, getting your kids to school, just being able to move around is prohibitive.
Yeah.
People can't afford this high price of gasoline. We've got to increase that minimum wage. We've got to put more money into education.
Good.
This business of the president's Leave No Child Behind has been a joke, and we've got to make sure that students who want to go to college can afford to, will have access that the student loan program is reasonable and sensible, and that they have access to resources to do it.
Well, those sound like great things to me, Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Thank you so much for joining us. Great talking to you again.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, so when we come back, it looks like Mort Mortensen's going to be here, so stay with us. It's always good to talk to her. I find her...
she's great.
Exciting. All right, we'll be back.
His new cologne, cat urine. Try it. Mark Maron.
You know, I haven't had that problem lately. Knock on whatever. Do not smell like cat pee lately. I haven't smelled it in my house lately either.
How about cat vomit?
Oh, yeah, we've got one that's got we have a bulimic cat.
Melvin's very sick. He's vomiting all day today.
Ours isn't sick. He just has, not unlike me, has a slight eating disorder and self-image problems. And insists on eating and immediately throwing up the food. To the point where he's had such a chronic problem with it, he's unable to meow properly. Because of, like, you know how people with bad acid reflex, it burns eventually, the stomach acid destroys their vocal cords? Well, my cat Boomer, he meows like, ow.
What does the vet say about that?
Ow. That's how he does it. Like, it's cute, but sad.
Help.
Help. Help. Change my diet. What does the vet say about it? Nothing. I actually made the diagnosis myself yesterday. Very proud of myself, actually.
Oh, no wonder it's working so well.
Yeah. Well,
the cure.
I don't know what the cure is. Cats vomit, don't they? That's just the way it goes.
Maybe he's trying to vomit up that hummingbird.
Dude, they did not get the hummingbird. A lot of people were checking in about the hummingbird. I think Ohm's girl, is that her name?
Orbit Boy?
Not Orbit Boy.
Z-Girl?
Yeah.
Zygote?
No, not Zygote. We have if you want to get a nickname, go to markmaron.com by all means and get on the blog. The woman from it's Ohm's girl. Now I got to look it up.
No, you don't have to do it. Just say you're somebody.
All right, look, she gave me all this information. She hooked me up with the bird rescue people here in Los Angeles. She told me where to go if I find another hummingbird. But we're going to stick with the story, Jim, that this one has become mythic, has become a great phoenix, and has moved on into the great unknown. I'm kind of rambling as I'm looking for her on the blog as I speak right now, but let's do this. I think it's Ohm's girl. Ohm's, every week, folks, we reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance. You okay, buddy?
Yeah, a little congestion over the last few weeks.
It must be the allergies, right?
Yeah, no, allergies, flu, whatever going around.
Okay.
Hummingbird virus.
Oh, I think I have that too.
Oh. Wesley Hill, Niagara Falls rescuer. Wesley Hill, the man who helped rescue dozens of people from the treacherous Niagara Falls, was found dead last week in a barrel, evidently the victim of his drinking buddy's misguided attempt to act out a funny bar joke. You're the one in the barrel. It's terrible. Hill was the last remaining member of the family whose business it was to rescue people too stupid to notice the river actually had a bridge going across it. Tragically, Hill's brother was killed in the 1950s while attempting to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel made out of dead people from previous stunts.
Oh.
Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. It's complicated to make a barrel out of dead people.
Very hard.
Yeah.
Didn't work, though. Mm-mm. When he was 21, Hill advised the crew working on the film Niagara. It was his job to bring Marilyn Monroe her coffee, donuts, and whenever she was low on it, fresh hangover vomit.
Oh, boy.
She had a problem with pills.
Yeah.
Wesley Hill's father was Red Hill, legendary riverman who recovered more than 300 bodies from Niagara Falls, all strangled and nude. Nobody ever asked Red about that.
Sounds fishy.
Yeah, something weird going on there. I don't know. Hill requested that he be buried in a place where nobody could ever find him and put him in a barrel.
It's a callback on the barrel. kind of.
It's a barrel callback.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, excuse me.
You all right? You want to blow your nose?
Sure, thanks.
It's making mine runny. It's that time of year. Summer colds, whatnot.
Oh,
you okay?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I'm glad you brought the box in. That sounded troublesome.
Commit it to it. Mm-hmm. Commit to it. Mm-hmm. Margaret Karcher, wife of the founder of Carl's Jr.
Mm.
Margaret Karcher, the wife of the guy who founded the Carl's Jr. restaurant chain, died this month after enduring 60 years of being known as the wife of the guy who founded the Carl's Jr. restaurant chain. She and her husband Carl started the restaurant back in 1941, when Carl, using their Plymouth sedan as collateral, made their first hamburgers out of nothing more than old Bakelite gear shift knobs and mohair upholstery.
Oh, those were, I heard those weren't very good.
No.
It wasn't a good burger. They didn't drip like the new ones.
No, they weren't very juicy.
No.
It's kinda, but you got to learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's get on.
Anything else you'd like to...
You go ahead.
Okay. Her son attributed his parents' success to their strong faith in God. In fact, it was their fascination with the crucifixion that inspired their favorite Carl's Jr. slogan, "If it doesn't get all over the place, it doesn't belong in your face." Today, Carl's Jr. is proud to sell their double $6 burger at over 1,400 calories, 100 grams of fat, and 2,400 milligrams of salt. It's no wonder Jesus said, "Consider the lilies." Or, "It's no wonder it's a meal big enough for a horse it was made out of."
Yeah, yeah. Or a barrel. Maybe it was made out of a barrel.
Maybe she was put in a barrel.
Yeah, that's great. You're writing stuff on the air.
Oh, man.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Karcher requested her body be dissected into colorful layers, placed neatly on a plate near some fries, and displayed on their website for nutritional content.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah.
Touching and sad, yet it's true.
Yeah, I believe it.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
This has been the weekly remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, I got something in my eye.
Oh, it's sad. It's horrible. Maybe try to get out with the corner of a Kleenex carefully in the bathroom in a mirror.
Sure.
I hope this show airs tonight because we are, you do realize that the U.S. military is preparing to shoot a Korean missile out of the sky if necessary. They are locked and loaded, apparently. That's what I'm hearing. I heard this today that the U.S. military has moved its ground-based interceptor missile defense system from test mode to operational amid concerns that North Korea is going to launch a test, they think. I don't know how it's being played, but I hope to see you tomorrow, Jim.
They can reach us on the West Coast, you know.
Yeah, of course they can. We got Paul Waldman from Media Matters in a minute. Steve Hofstetter, the comedian, is around. It is Ohm's Girl. Waldman, Paul, up next.
And now he's running on restaurant grease, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. Thank you all. It's been great. I've had a great time. I'm not leaving. Why am I saying it like that?
You're going to have a great time.
Folks, Media Matters, they are so thorough in their mission to reveal the bias and lies that the media enables the right to get away with that they are annoying in a good way. Every day, I get at least a dozen dispatches from them with links to media bias. Paul Waldman is a senior fellow at the Media Matters, at the Media Matters, like at the Media Matters headquarters, the underground bunker where Media Matters operates from. And he's the author of the book, Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. He is with us now. Thank you for joining us, Paul Waldman.
My pleasure.
So I don't know if I asked you this question, but I got to ask you again if I did. When I go to your site and I see how much of this right-wing bias or right-wing apologist behavior there is in the media, I have to ask, because, you know, like you got Matt Lauer up there today. And is this an agenda or is a lot of it just lazy reporting?
I think that a lot of it is laziness. But, you know, one thing we don't try to do is to kind of get inside reporters' minds.
Right.
And say, okay, well, this guy's biased. That's something that the right does. And as far as we're concerned at Media Matters, it really doesn't matter all that much. We are tracking that conservative misinformation as it moves through the press, not just in the right-wing media, but in the mainstream media, too. And, you know, when Matt Lauer comes out and asks Ron Suskind, for instance, the author of this new book, when you talk about the inadequacies of the Department of Homeland Security, aren't you emboldening our enemies? If he says that because he's trying to advance the Republican agenda, or if he says that just because he's repeating a kind of phrasing and terminology that he hears out there without even thinking about it, it doesn't really matter. The problem is that he's saying it, and that's what we're trying to point out.
Right. And then you get people, you know, on Fox, like Cal Thomas, who says something like, look at talking about Tony Snow and Dan Bartlett in the helicopter with the military helmets on. And when he says something like, quote, looked a lot better than those metal helmets than Dukakis did in his, that is clearly a personal interpretation of a Republican talking point. Those guys are on their payroll, basically.
Oh, sure. I mean, maybe not literally on the payroll, but the thing about Fox News that I think differentiates them is that they really are kind of integrated into a seamless web of propaganda that emerges from the right. I mean, you know, there are certainly plenty of liberal people on the radio and on television, maybe not so many on television, but certainly on the radio, yourself included, but it's not as though you're just reading off the talking points that you got from the Democratic National Committee this morning.
Are they sending them? I mean, I think that's one of the problems, isn't it, Paul Waldman? I mean, you know, if I have to, you know, get about three or four different, I got to go to your site, I got to go to Center for American Progress, I got to see what people are talking about. I wish there was some sort of collective ideology that would enable them to put out successful talking points, don't you?
Well, I think there's two things going on. One, it is an organizational question, as you say. Mm. The other question that... The other part of it is really the willingness of people to do it. You know, when people on the right start to characterize what Democrats want to do on Iraq, which is what the majority of the Americans want to do, which is get out of there, mm-hmm. When they start to say that's cut and run and repeat this phrase over and over, really every single person on the right side, whether it's Republicans in Congress or conservative talk show hosts, they hear this and they say, ah, that's the phrase. We're going to repeat it over and over and over and drill it into people's heads. Well, so some of it just happens organically that way.
Yeah, but I mean, Karl Rove, I mean, he put that out in New Hampshire, that, you know, that's his design. He was very Rovian, Karl Rove, the other day in New Hampshire, when he said, if we hadn't been there, we wouldn't have got Zarqawi. And that is just classic spin. That is classic Rovian spin. And then he starts talking about this cut and run issue. And are they really going to you think that they can make that angle stick? Do you think they can make that stick again? I just don't think they can.
I think they're certainly going to try, and they're going to try to make Democrats blink. And I think that, you know, one of the things that too many Democrats believe is that their problem, quote-unquote, on national security can be solved by taking a particular position or avoiding a particular position. But what Republicans have understood for a long time is that it's not so much about the position you take, it's about whether you look like you're standing on principle and being strong that way.
Right.
So they don't care that the majority of the American public wants us to leave Iraq in some, you know, in some fashion over some kind of reasonable period of time. They're not in step with the majority opinion right now, but they think they can still win by kind of scaring Democrats into hemming and hawing and saying, oh, okay, we're not going to cut and run, and that's what makes Democrats look weak. It's not the position they end up being at. It's what happens along the way, and I think they look at what's happened in recent elections, and frankly, they don't have a lot of cards to play at this point.
Right.
So they're going to go back to that well and try to sort of frighten Democrats into becoming timid about where they stand. And frankly, you know, when you say the word strong Democrat, who is it that comes to mind? Is it sort of the people who are saying that we need to follow what the president does on Iraq, or is it the people who are standing up?
It's Russ Feingold, and
that's what not enough people understand.
Right. When I think strong Democrat, you think Feingold, Murtha, I think Conyers. I think it's not a long list.
Exactly, and those are people. It's not that they took the most hawkish position. It's that they made a stand on principle, and
right.
That's what made them look strong. And that's what Republicans have understood for a long time.
Well, that cut and run. The thing that's ingenious about just those three words is that if you have people who are on the fence, even if they're right-wing believers, and they're like, I'm against this war, and I'm done with these people that support this war, cut and run implicates their loyalty and patriotism.
Right, and you hear other phrases, too, like we're not going to wave the flag of surrender, and so you begin to characterize those positions as being weak and timid and unpatriotic and all of those things, for a lot of Democrats, that makes them run for the hills.
Well, we're talking to Paul Waldman. He's a senior fellow at Media Matters. Let's talk about some of this frame that Coulter laid on the world. Now, I was surprised. I know she's just selling books, and I know she's just a, you know, some sort of strange Nazi clown. But I believe that the frame that she was putting out there actually took a little traction, which really frightened me, and I think it's going to be used against some of our veteran candidates for Congress. I think that the frame of, like, you know, the idea that the Democrats are putting out victims of things as spokespeople, which is untrue in and of itself, because you can't argue with victims, is a dangerous, the way she phrased it and in talking about the 9/11 women, the widows, was unforgivable. But I was surprised from reading your site over Media Matters how much of that frame started to take traction and, like, hey, I don't agree with the way she said it, but I do agree with the principle of it, because that can be used against our candidates.
Right, and a lot of people, not just right-wing media figures, but even some mainstream media figures, were saying that she has a point. But the thing about that is that she only has a point if you think that the only way you can argue with somebody is to attack them personally. You know, if the 9/11 widows said that we're not doing enough to combat terrorism and Ann Coulter thinks we are, then she could argue that on the substance and no one would criticize her for it. It's only when you want to attack someone personally that she would get flack for attacking the 9/11 widows. So it just kind of, it reveals how much her perspective on how you go about arguing politics has been accepted by so many in the media. But, you know, the real problem isn't so much Coulter herself. It's the media outlets that give her a forum. When the Today Show puts her on 3 times in 8 months to come on and spew her hateful rhetoric, they're the problem. You know, people like her are always going to be out there, but there's this enormous tolerance within the mainstream media for right-wing extremism that she represents.
Yeah, and what was fascinating to me also in seeing her on Jay Leno's show, outside of the fact that some progressives figured out a way to blame George Carlin for not standing up, which is ridiculous. And of course, Leno was going to throw her softballs and act, you know, cute and entertained by her. But they obviously filled half that audience with right-wing ditto heads. Because did you watch that? The crowd response to Coulter? And it was completely disproportionate and bizarre. Did you find that?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they did it intentionally or if that was just who happened to show up for the show that week. But the fact that she's even on The Tonight Show is appalling. I mean, can you think of anyone on the left who regularly advocates the murder of people they disagree with, as Ann Coulter does, that gets on The Tonight Show and The Today Show and gets reviewed in major newspapers?
Are you kidding? I got friends. I mean, you know, Janine Garofalo, Sam Cedar has got a new book out, and he can't get on the Letterman Show. They're not putting him on, not even on The Daily Show. The Daily Show, to some degree, is frightened to put extreme leftist ideologues on, not even leftists, but just progressives on, because they don't see, when you sit next to somebody like Coulter, you can go, hey, come on, that's crazy. But you don't want, these guys don't want to be pigeonholed into having to have a political conversation with a progressive or somebody who has different views than what they think their audience has.
Yeah, well, it's certainly very troubling that The Daily Show wouldn't want to have them on. But, you know, that's a great example. They have a very funny book with a lot of interesting insights in it. And there's nothing there that I know of where they're actually advocating people's murder the way Ann Coulter does or anything like that. It's not an extremist tract. But yet they can't seem to get on television to promote it, whereas television organizations are lining up to put Ann Coulter on.
Well, they're afraid of the backlash from the religious right freaks who have nothing better to do than to sign on to letter writing campaigns.
Well, you know, I think that's why progressives need to start doing some of the same thing. They need to start writing letters and, you know, not being angry, but being polite, but firm. And when, you know, a company like NBC puts Ann Coulter on, write them an email, call them. Start to apply that same kind of pressure from the other side, and maybe you can stiffen the spines of those people at the networks and at news organizations and newspapers and magazines to start to get them to do the right thing. If you apply that pressure in the other direction, maybe they can stand back up.
Paul Wellman, I wish we could get organized to that degree and create a singular momentum on almost anything. I really do. I think it's a great idea. Can you do me one favor before we go? Please, you know, tell me that you will continue to take Glenn Beck to task, because that guy should not be on television. He shouldn't be allowed. And he's pushing himself off as some sort of cutesy, kind of goofy, funny guy. But he is a hate-spewing maniac and needs to be taken down a notch.
Exactly. He's another example of somebody who was a radical right-wing radio host who was given his own TV show. How come Marc Maron doesn't have his own TV show?
That's a question I've been asking for many years. Even before I was as political as I am now, Paul. But thanks for joining us, Paul Wellman. I hope we can call you again.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Take care, man.
All right.
Bye. That was Paul Wellman from Media Matters. Go there. It's important. They do an incredible job up at Media Matters. Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success is also Paul Waldman's book. We're going to get Lawton Smalls on the line here in just a second, so hang out.
Now he can help protect your liver from alcohol, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Hey, people, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that listeners know what's going on in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is our very own Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Hello, Lawton.
Hello, Mark. God's having a barbecue, and he's throwing some sin weenies on the grill.
All right, okay.
Sizzling them up.
Oh, no, you're happy. What happened? What's this about? The price of gas go up or something?
No, Mark, but I like the way you think.
Uh-huh.
I'm filled with the spirit about Iraq, Mark. We've turned the corner, and there's the morning sun shining like Pat Boone eating a vanilla ice cream cone on Easter Sunday. Glory, hallelujah. Our truth is marching over everybody else.
Wonderful. Well, back up, Senor Smalls. Hey, we'll turn the corner into what?
Turn the corner.
Heavy traffic? What are you talking about?
No.
What are you talking about?
Well, first, our brave, resourceful Republican Senate ignored all that negative defeatocrat whining and passed that resolution saying, we're not going to cut and run in Iraq. I'm looking at you, John Kerry, John Murtha. That's where your ideas belong, by the way. In the John, flush that stinky mess out of here.
Hey, look,
bye-bye.
Buddy, listen to me, Lawton. That resolution accomplished nothing. Nothing.
Oh, you wish nothing.
Uh-huh.
Now, you defeatocrats are on the record saying, I, secular, weak, gay, surrender monkey, want the United States of America to cut and run from our manly responsibilities in Iraq. Furthermore, I'm an operative of Al-Qaeda. I hate Jesus, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and children born of lawfully wedded parents. Now y'all are wiggling on the hook like a stuck walleye. Flip-flop your way out of that one in the midterm election, baby killer.
Lawton,
come on,
Lawton,
now.
Lawton, that resolution was pointless, gutless, political grandstanding. Is that all you got?
Are you kidding? That was just some potato skins with melted cheese and sour cream. Appetizer, the real red meat tartare, was President George W. Two terms mandate Bush going to Iraq.
Wait.
Beautiful, man.
You mean the one where he stayed 6 whole hours and then ran away?
I see it affected you, too.
Uh-huh.
The visit to Baghdad was like something out of the Old Testament. The Book of W.
Come on.
Under the cloak of secrecy, the prophet decider descended into the Holy Land, laid a firm heterosexual Christian hand on Al-Maliki's shoulder and said, fear not, anointed one, for thou art doing a heck of a job, and it was good.
Prophet? Oh. Are you spelling prophet, P-R-O-F-I-T, Lawton?
I don't know, Mark. Uh-huh. After his visit, every one of those Iraqi fellas turned away from their tin-pot Islamic god and became deacons in the Baptist church. I saw it happen right there on the spot.
All right, go ahead.
Incredible.
Go ahead. Pile it on, Lawton. That's fine. Next thing you're going to tell me is since al-Zarqawi died, there hasn't been any violence in Iraq.
I know. It's eerie, but I'm not surprised. That's just the kind of divine leadership we're witnessing in the White House right now. Let me tell you something about that al-Zarqawi business.
Uh-huh.
Just between us.
Okay, this should be good. What?
All right, folks are trying to keep this quiet,
but
Bush killed that terrorist evildoer with his own two hands.
Oh, stop it. Just stop
he
it.
Did.
Come on.
Bush is a 6th-degree black belt in Taekwondo, a master of Brazilian capoeira. He's had extensive ninja training. You know, he just swept into Zarqawi's room and slew him with a slight twist of his thumb.
Oh, stop it. No, Lawton, it was a bomb. It was a bomb. It was two bombs. It was bombs, Lawton.
They doctored that up later.
Come on.
The president likes to inject himself into black ops from time to time. Of course, he got a taste for that when he was in the military all those years. You know how that is. He's like that. A very violent, masculine, virile character.
Uh-huh. Are you done? Are you done with the lying, Lawton?
Done?
About Iraq, Lawton, I think you need to take a time out and maybe put your head down.
it's hard work, the lying.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up every morning, and I look in the mirror and I say, today, Lawton Smalls, you will support this war.
Mm-hmm.
And then by, I don't know, 9:30 or so, my hands are shaking. I'm looking around for my cough medicine. Codeine's the only way I get through the day most of the time. Mm-hmm. I'm buying Robitussin in bulk just to numb the pain of lying. I'm a liar! I lie!
Okay. All right. Lawton, pull it together. Now you got to lay off the Robitussin, okay?
Mark, it kills the lies.
That's not the solution, Lawton. The lies can only be killed by the truth, my friend. And I know that's going to be hard for you to accept, but you just got to try it, okay?
No more Robitussin.
No, you got to pull it together, little man.
Oh. Bush knows jiu-jitsu, too. I once saw him throw Vladimir Putin down the stairs so hard he separated his shoulder. A lot of people don't know that story.
Goodbye,
Lawton. All kinds of martial arts.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you, Mark. Deal with it.
Steve Hofstetter up next.
He's just been approved to fight cervical cancer, Mark Maron.
What about 7 World Trade Center, man? Wake up, people. Like that guy, my friend Rick Overton, was in my face. So you're not ready to accept the truth, and pretty soon everybody will accept the truth.
Ask him for the proof. You want documented proof.
You don't want to accept the truth. And it's really like, no, I just don't want to be talking in the tone that you're talking in. Publicly, necessarily.
You know, those wide-eyed stares are great on stage when you're doing comedy.
Yeah. Steve Hofstetter, my friends, is the host of Four Quotas. You still hosting that?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Four Quotas, that's on Sirius Radio. I've done the show many times, sort of like a dirty, politically incorrect, in a way, with only comics. He writes for Maxim Magazine occasionally and ESPN. His comedy album, Cure for the Cable Guy, is available now. He's with us in the studio. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Larry the Cable Guy, is he really the enemy?
I don't know if he's the enemy, but I think he's a good representation of it. I think he is the personification of the Confederate flag right now.
Now, have you been accused of player hating by other comics?
If other comics were cool enough to know the term player hating, sure. But for the most part, other comics are just like, hey, what are you doing, man?
Why are you making fun of Larry? He's just a guy.
Most of the thing, people are like, but he's making a lot of money. And I'm like, yeah, doing something he doesn't believe in. That's called selling out. That's the problem. Although his marketing is amazing. I saw a get-her-done wife beater, and the irony is delicious.
Yeah. So, now, Steve, you are one of those marketing whiz kids, too.
Thank you.
Of the MySpace generation. I've heard people talk about comics who they don't even like, but they're like, dude, but he's got, like, 90,000 friends.
Are you saying they talk about me that way?
Exactly.
Yes.
I didn't want to drop it, but
No, I know how it is. MySpace is great. If you know, anytime you want to reach a large audience of weird goth girls to come to a show, I think that's what you need.
Do you find though that? Let me ask you a question, just in terms of a business question. Do you find that you do have to deliver the goods though? I mean, you can have 100,000 friends and get a lot of people out to a few gigs, but I mean, how long is that really going to last?
Well, look at Dustin Diamond, the guy who played Screech. Right now, he's selling T-shirts on his website because they're foreclosing on his home because he went around as a comic and it didn't work out.
Right.
You know, and I don't know the guy, and no offense to him, but you know, that's what happens if you have the hype without being able to deliver the goods.
It's like Mark Price. Remember Mark Price?
Yeah, Skippy. Right?
Skippy. Yeah, he was touring as like, I'm the bad Skippy. I'm not really like Skippy. Saget tours, but you know, he's rich and also he's funny.
Yeah, he's got the goods. He can deliver.
That's right. So now, what about this sports thing? You do a sports show as well?
Yeah, I do. Well, and I write a column for Sports Illustrated every week.
Every week?
For the website sportsillustrated.com.
Okay.
And I wrote about paintball last week, and it's a bad idea to anger 12-year-olds with guns. That's probably not the contingent that you want. I got over 100 pieces of hate mail last week I was just like, you know what, paintball doesn't deserve to be on television. It is literally watching paint dry.
Right, you know, right, yeah.
There's
a
reason why that's the phrase for boredom. And people got pissed off, but I love sports. I enjoy I enjoy being able to write about it.
Well, that's a good question, though, because there's this whole, all of a sudden, extreme sports happened.
Yeah.
And we've got new sports that we have to sort of integrate into our understanding of sports. And some of them, I'm not sure they're sports. You know, like a guy, you know, clawing up the side of a hill with just his fingers and no ropes. Is that a sport or is that just stupid?
That's not a sport, but it's a hell of a movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's a Tom Cruise movie. I think it's three Tom Cruise movies.
Yeah, and a Sly Stallone every now and then, too.
Yeah. But are there some sports that surprise you generally where you're like, that's not a sport?
Yeah, A&E just aired the Paper Rock Scissors Championship.
Get out of here.
And they say, I will not. They say that there's some sort of psychology to it. And there was some interview where some guy was talking about, like, well, lawyers typically do paper because they work with a lot of paper. I'm like, is that how simple?
Paper rock. Wait, what is it? What is the game?
The championship. The paper rock scissors. You know, rock
children's
beats
game.
Rock beats scissors, and scissors beats paper, and paper beats rock. You know, when you go 1, 2, 3, shoot, and you throw your thing out there, and apparently there's some weird psychology to it. I would pick rock a lot because I would like to throw rocks through these people's windows if they keep airing this crap on TV.
You know what's sad about me is I don't even know what the hell that game is. Where did I grow up?
You've never been around kids?
But no, my brother's got kids, but we played another game with a board. We had a board game, and I've done the sort of, hey, Pat, Duck Duck, or whatever it is.
That's
crap.
Next week.
What is that one where you patty cake?
Patty cake champion.
That's actually on TNT because they know drama.
And the sad thing is it's grown-ups playing with other grown-ups.
It is.
It is? Really?
It is. Oh. This is the big leagues, Mark. This isn't Bush League kid stuff.
I just don't know when the hell sports changed. And the thing was, I was never a sports guy. Were you a sports guy or were you always a sidelines guy?
Oh, I loved I love sports. I was always above average but not good enough to star.
Yeah.
You know, I was always like
so
the guy
like
who could make the team.
Except for maybe 10 people
I'm convinced the professional athletes are just the guys that don't get injured.
Yeah.
Because
make it with
they just eventually keep going until they don't. Because I know so many people, I was a standout in high school. I had a 120-mile-an-hour fastball, and I'm like, that's not possible. You can't. He's like, but I got injured, and that's why you didn't hear about me.
Yeah, it threw out my arm, threw out my elbow.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. It was a freak growing up accident.
Yeah. No, my sports career ended in center field as a fat, doughy kid in Pee Wee Little League.
They put a fat, doughy kid in center field?
Yeah, because it was like, you know, it was rare that someone could hit it that far. You know, so, I mean, it just didn't happen that often, and I was out there, and one was coming to me, and I had it lined up, and I fell down, and it bounced off my face and broke my nose. How do you break your nose in center field? That was a sure sign to me that it was over.
That was time to hang it up. See, I was a pitcher. I had the arm of a closer and the mental stability of a water boy. Mm-hmm. So it eventually didn't work out for me.
Sleepy Bill Kolar was a pitcher back in the day. He looks like a baseball pitcher, doesn't he? Kind of strange, quiet, lanky guy. You don't know what the hell he's thinking half the time, but he can throw a ball really fast. You can just see him staring down a batter, spitting on stuff. They do a lot of spitting in baseball.
They do an awful
lot. What's your favorite sport?
I'm a baseball guy. I love baseball. I'm a big Met fan, so this year is working out, finally.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's the Mets don't suck this year.
Okay.
That's all I'm talking about.
Year? I wish I knew. Like, I missed my... When I lived in New York there, I worked with a Mets fan. He was crazy. So you got... now, what about politics? You know, where do you stand with that? Where are you with that? I mean, you take on Larry the Cable Guy. Do you take on the president?
Oh, yeah. I actually... I disagree with what Paul was saying before about Ann Coulter, because if we don't let her advocate the murder of people, then we can't advocate for hers.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, I think we need to be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
And understand. I'm so fed up at what's going on at the red herrings that we're given. Basically,
sure.
This entire country is a giant red herring right now. We're off topic. Like pot supporting terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
That's my absolute favorite one.
That was a good one. Yeah.
Makes Snoop Dogg a war profiteer.
It's
fantastic.
Pot supporting, that was one for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big one, the whole gay marriage.
Yeah, well, that's still a
huge
one. Yeah.
Yeah, and even the whole cut and run thing, what you were talking about before with, you know, with phrases like that, and they throw this out. I prefer to think that the Democrats are mending and slowly jogging.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, it doesn't sound as good.
Well, that's the interesting thing about the effectiveness of something like cut and run would play into your cable guy paradigm.
Yeah.
That the kind you would assume that the kind of people that would buy that type of ridiculous talking point frame would be exactly the kind of guy that enjoy the cable guy.
It is the simplest, you know, it's the people who appeal. deal. It's the wall Americans, basically, who just, you know, who want this easy, quick, everything right in front of them. I posted a video of Larry before he was Larry, when he was still Dan Whitney doing stand-up.
He wasn't, he's not a bad guy.
No, no, I think Dan Whitney's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's the character I have a problem with.
Uh-huh.
But I posted a video, or the perception of the character, actually.
Yeah.
I posted a video of him before he was Larry, and I figured the reaction would be like, oh, that's funny, thanks for showing that to me. Most people who wrote to me were like, oh, I had no idea that that wasn't really him.
That wasn't like, really a cable guy?
That, yeah, that is the smoke screen that we have right now. When he did the voice in Cars, he wasn't credited as Dan Whitney. He was credited as Larry the Cable Guy.
Well, that happens. You know, that people are... I'm surprised how many people on the left are sort of duped by things that they shouldn't be in terms of show business. For some reason, there's people that will sit around for hours investigating, you know, papers upon piles of papers about what really happened on 9/11, but they'll accept, you know, something on TV as being real that is just ridiculously not real.
Well, in fairness, everything else on television is real.
Yeah.
That's what I've figured out.
Everything is on, right.
Certainly. Yeah, reality TV, there's nothing more real than a scripted show of seven people.
Yeah, just ask the writers.
Exactly.
I know a few. You must know a couple of guys.
I was on the second season of Last Comic Standing. Did one episode. I was told to come down to Nashville to audition, and then there was a lot of stuff that went on there that I didn't know about.
Yeah,
it was a nice little education.
So now your website is stevehofstetter.com, and you have your CDs available there. You've got a lot of you've got hate mail on your website.
Yes, I have. I had one person call me the Antichrist.
Really?
Which that would make Christ the Anti-Steve.
he might look like you, actually, the Antichrist.
It's possible. I got the red hair. I got the whole, you know,
a
the
red-headed
devil thing.
Jew.
Yeah, exactly. That's
it's rare.
Well, I guess I am Jewish. I am technically anti-Christ.
Uh-huh.
You know, but, you know, I don't campaign about it.
Are you 100% Jew?
I am 100%.
Really?
As far as I know.
With a name like Hofstetter and red hair, it's peculiar.
Well, there was a bit of an occupation back in Austria, in the day where we came, where the Germans kind of came in. We actually got the name. We were paid to go to war. We were paid to switch names with another family and go to war, and we lived through it. So my entire family are hired mercenaries. That's where I come from.
And what happened to you? You know, you look like you're ready to suit up and go.
No. But I'll take on easy targets.
All right. So thanks for being with us, Steve Hofstetter. You can link to Steve's site on my site at markmaron.com, or you can go to stevehofstetter.com. And I'll talk to you soon, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You take care. We'll be back with we're going to talk to here in a minute. Charlie Imes from the San Diego for Democracy bunch about a festival that I'm going to be involved with, and he's organizing, so stick around.
And that's why we can't have anything nice. Mark Maron.
Look at this, man. They're taking this guy down. This Liberian president, Charles Taylor, is going to the Netherlands, to The Hague, to stand trial for war crimes.
Man, if you're going to stand trial for war crimes, do it in Holland.
Well, I mean, that's where they do it, at The Hague.
And I know.
Like, why? Well, this is all still functional and operational. Let's get Bush up there. Let's get some of our guys up there.
This country doesn't take Holland seriously. That's the problem.
Well, they should.
Of course they should, but they don't.
You wait. You wait till after November. They're all going to be
people
rove the rest
pot.
Of them.
They have hash houses. They have good vacations, health care in Holland.
I don't think that Charles Taylor is going to be getting any pot or health care on his vacation.
Well, I know. That's why they don't take it seriously, though, unfortunately.
People, Charlie Imes is on the Air America affiliate down in San Diego. He's on Saturday, 7 to 8. He hosts the show Uncommon Sense down there on KLSD AM 1360. Now, you know, folks, San Diego, only an hour and a half away, lovely beach town, not far from Los Angeles. And Charlie is one of the organizers of the San Diego for Democracy, Democracy Fest. The Democracy Fest, he's here with us now. How are you, Charlie?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Well, it's nice to see you. So this is July 14th and 16th. Tell us, man, when I was on the phone with you, I'm going to be part of this. Franken's going to be down there. Paul Hackett's going to be down there. Howard Dean.
Yeah.
Who else?
We got an all-star lineup. Maxine Waters is coming down.
Just talked to her today.
David Sirota will be there.
Brilliant.
Yeah. We got Senator Deborah Bowen's going to be on panels down there. It's all-star lineup.
And, that's awesome.
Yeah, we got even somebody you haven't heard of that's really cool, Wahu Kara. She's a Nobel Peace Prize nominee, and she's running for president of Kenya. And she's going to be sitting on a panel with Maxine Waters talking about third world debt. We've got really an all-star lineup.
So now the idea is it's Friday and Saturday. It's a whole weekend of events. There are workshops, educational things. You can actually probably touch David Sirota at one of the booths.
Oh, sure.
What are some of the things you have planned?
Well, you know, it's actually Friday through Sunday. You know, it's a 3-day thing.
Okay, I'll stay Sunday. That's cool.
Yeah. Al Franken will be doing his show there live on Friday morning.
But no one can touch me.
Yeah.
No one will touch me. I'm just there to do my show.
But Dustin Hoffman?
No, it's a little mixture of Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman's like, oh, sure, I can do that.
Sounds like you're doing Midnight Cowboy. That's the worst impression I've ever heard.
No, it's a slightly bad
Peter
Franken.
Falk. Peter Falk.
Why don't you back off, clown boy?
I'm sorry, man. I'm just
what
trying
you
to
got a nitpick
understand
for?
Who you're
I don't,
doing.
I don't. I don't. You no, know, everyone else
just
got it.
Trying to help
I have
out.
Established my Franken with my audience long ago, and you just come here and crap on my little parade?
I'm just trying to understand.
Hey, why don't you write another barrel joke? Here we go.
Barrels are funny.
I love you, Jim. Don't get uncomfortable, Charlie.
No worries.
Tell us about some of the panels that will be down there.
I'll let you guys riff all you want, man. I'm having fun.
So Sirota's going to do what? Because, you know, he's a genius.
Sirota's actually, he's going to do his own thing, a workshop, talking about his book. He's going to do a book signing.
Mm-hmm.
So people want to come down, meet him, buy the book, get him sign it and everything, sit through. He's going to talk all about it.
Paul Hackett is going to be talking about what?
Hackett's actually going to be sitting on a panel about staunching the hemorrhage, stopping the military-industrial complex.
That's interesting because Paul Hackett is one of these guys that was going to make a run for Senate, was dissuaded by the by factions within the Democratic Party. I think it was Rahm Emanuel who actually said, you know, maybe we can find a better guy. Maybe you don't got the chops. Maybe you ain't the right guy. Maybe just start in Congress.
Yeah.
Is he bitter about that? Do you know?
You know, I don't think he's thrilled with it, but, you know, he's pretty well grounded. He's moving on. I asked him if he was going to run for any other offices. He said, nope. Got other things to do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, and now what are some of the other, what's Franken's going to be doing a show down there. Howard Dean is going to be down there for the big shindig that I'm part of, right, on Saturday?
Right. Actually, Saturday night we've got at the Open Air Theater, it's kind of like the Greek Theater you got up here. It's an amphitheater. We got like Saturday night beach party blowout.
Right.
It's music and politics and comedy. We're going to have you doing your bit down there. We're going to have Howard Dean, Maxine Waters. Hackett will be on that stage. We've got Gary Hoey, the king of modern surf guitar.
Right on.
He's going to be like the house band for the night.
You like that, Jim? You want to go?
Sure,
you're going. Yeah. We're doing the show down there. You're going.
Really?
We're doing it?
Yeah, maybe. We're trying to put that together, see if you'll do your show down there live.
I have to buy pants?
Yeah, you might have to bring... No, shorts. You got to wear shorts. It's going to be outdoors, surf music.
Yeah, this is San Diego, man. This is going to be nice.
This is going to be good, man. And I want people to come down from Los Angeles. That's the whole idea. That's why, you know, you're going to come on a couple of times. I'm going to talk about it. You can go to sdfd.org, which would stand for San Diego for Democracy, .org, and get information and buy tickets to this thing.
Actually, yeah. You go there to get information. You can follow another link to go to a different website to buy tickets. That's democracyfest.us.
Why do progressives have to complicate things? Can't we just have one website? Can't we get on the same page, literally get on the same web page? Well, it's all right. I understand. You got to do what you got to do.
Hey, we didn't want to complicate our lives, so we're letting other people do the money pit for us, you know?
All right, man. So now your show, what do you cover on your show down there?
Well, mostly, you know, for the last several weeks and for the next few weeks, we're talking to everybody that's going to be at Democracy Fest. And, in fact, I'm going to see if I can get you up early in the morning come on my show.
Absolutely. I'm used to that. I'll just stay up all night, dude, and we'll talk.
Party it right through.
Yeah, it'll be trippy, but it'll be good, man.
Excellent.
Yeah. So hopefully we will do our show down there. We will be talking about this event for the next few weeks. We want to get people down there.
Yeah, and KTLK is actually coming up with some really good ideas to make it fun for the listeners from L.A. to come on down, maybe put together a listener party down in
all right.
LA people.
So we'll see if that happens. Charlie Imes, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man.
All right, here we go. So you don't get caught off guard or uninformed. Here's today's version of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. Vice President Dick Cheney said yesterday that aggressive U.S. action is responsible for preventing new terror attacks since the September 11th attacks. Cheney believes the administration has successfully prevented attacks through a series of preemptive strikes. For example, destroying freedom before the terrorists can get their hands on it.
Whew, long way to go for so little attention. The first female leader of the U.S. Episcopal Church said yesterday she believed homosexuality was no sin and homosexuals were created by God to love people of the same gender. When interviewed on CNN, Church Bishop Catherine Jeffers Scorey said she believed not only that homosexual is not a sin, but that sometimes even God himself makes bitchy remarks about what people are wearing. Some Episcopal dioceses are threatening to break away over the issue of homosexuality, but are afraid to lose church members who can direct the Christmas pageant. Anything wrong? Is that wrong? It's good. I like it. A woman in British Columbia came home to find a young bear eating oatmeal in her kitchen. It's already funny, huh?
That's cute.
Coincidentally, the woman next door tried to put two lost children into her oven.
Ooh.
Yeah, you got to think for a second. It's a fairy tale joke, right? Am I right? I'm not missing a point.
Grim.
On that.
Did that really happen?
Ugh.
Man, somebody ought to get that one.
Listen, Jim. He's a little nasally. I haven't done it in a while. It's a little rusty. All right? What impressions do you do, Jim?
Outside of the characters
that you've invented.
I do Ed Platt, the chief, on Get Smart.
Okay, let's have it.
Max. Thank you.
That's a cop-out impression.
Not a cop-out. This is a real impression.
This
is Ed Platt, the chief.
Didn't you do an impression the night we did stand-up together that didn't work?
An impression of a stand-up comic?
No.
I beat you to it.
I love you, man. Tomorrow we got John Strausbaugh, the author of Black Like You. Robert Greenwald from the Outfox fame is going to talk about his new film about Tom DeLay. And we're going to talk to somebody in Baghdad. Good night, sheeple. Definitely going to yoga.